So I'd like to invite you for a moment to time travel with me. Are you game?
Sure.
Okay. If you'd like to close your eyes for this, you're welcome to do that or keep them open. But I want you to imagine that we're standing together 5,000 years ago, around 3200 BCE, 500 years before Stonehenge or the pyramids of Giza were built, before, long before clocks or calendars, before electric light, or before science knew that the Earth was round. We're huddled together, wrapped in heavy wool and animal skins in the Irish countryside, and our breath is visible in the cold air. And the land around us is quiet, bare, and dormant. And it's today, the winter solstice, 5,000 years ago. The longest night of the year, the shortest day. And we've gathered before dawn at a great stone mound rising out of the Irish landscape. Newgrange, and now you might want to open your eyes. Newgrange is a sacred burial tomb, a place built with great care, precision, and devotion. Massive stones hauled for miles, carvings spiraled into rock faces. Grant, go ahead and show these stones. They're amazing. Covered in spirals and all sorts of interesting designs. And then there's a narrow stone passageway that you see right in the middle with a box right above it, the light box. And this narrow stone passageway leads deep into the earth, into a chamber that feels more like a womb than a tomb. And Newgrange was built by early farming peoples during Neolithic times as a megalith. The massive stones that were brought in long before metal tools to align human life with the turning of the sun. And inside, normally, it's completely dark. No torches are lit, and we wait in the darkness together. And then slowly, almost imperceptibly, something begins to change. A thin blade of light appears above the doorway. A roof box, engineered with incredible accuracy, catches the rising sun. And that single shaft of golden light travels down the long passageway, inch by inch, until it reaches the very heart of the chamber, and it illuminates the darkness. And for that moment, dark stones glow and ancient carvings come alive, and the womb of the earth is illuminated. For a few precious minutes, the light has returned. Now, this was not spectacle. This was a sacred moment. This was trust. This was a people saying to one another and to the future, even when we are surrounded by darkness, the light does not abandon us. It finds us in the darkest of moments and in the darkest of tombs. And I had the great privilege of standing inside Newgrange this past September during my study leave in Ireland. It wasn't on the solstice itself, but it was close enough to feel the power of this place. And they conducted a simulation of the light coming in for us to see. Just like the light that this morning, while we were sleeping, entered the tomb for 17 minutes. So dawn is just after 9 a.m. Irish time, which would have been just around 1 a.m. our time. And you could even watch the live stream at around 1 a.m. our time. And I actually watched it this morning before I came in, and it was a little touch and go because, true to Ireland, there were a lot of clouds. And the clouds were on the horizon, dimming the sun. But just before the time window ran out, the sun peered over the clouds, and they got about 1 or 2 minutes of light coming into New Grange, and you can go online and see it. It's magical. So this tradition of welcoming the light into the darkest place only on the winter solstice, because that's the only time geometrically that it works, this continues for 5,000 years now. And isn't it extraordinary that they were able to build that and find exactly that the sun was in a slightly different place at that time, but it still collects in there even now. And I placed my hands on the ancient stone walls that were cold and worn smooth by thousands of years of human touch. And I imagined the generations who had stood exactly where I stood in the silence, holding their breath in the darkness, believing something that they could not yet see would come to be. And I was struck by this truth. They didn't build New Grange because life was easy and it was a celebration of the ease of life. No, they built it because life was hard, because winter came year after year, because loss came, and because uncertainty came. And they needed a chamber of memory and promise. So they built New Grange as an act of hope, as a place where they could come and collect the light every year. And New Grange wasn't alone. There are tombs like this all over Ireland, many of them still hidden under grassy mounds. Ireland is extraordinary with so many ancient places that haven't even been excavated yet. And all across the ancient world, human beings were tracking the sky with reverence and attention. Long before modern science, they knew something essential. They knew that the shortening of the days mattered and that the light mattered. And in fact, that life depended on it. So the winter solstice wasn't an abstract idea. I know it's easy for us to just go on as normal during this time. But for them, it was a harbinger of survival. For agricultural peoples, this moment marked the end of the fear that the sun might disappear altogether. And it meant that crops would grow again. And it would eventually get warmer. And animals would birth again. And children would survive another year. It marked the threshold between despair and trust. And of course, in Northern Europe, this season was known as Yule, celebrated by our Yule log right there, sitting on the edge of the piano. A time not of denial of the dark, but of deep acknowledgement. People named the darkness, they honored it, they gathered close to one another. And fires were not just lit for warmth, but for meaning. Evergreen branches were brought indoors as symbols of life that endures even in the cold winter. And candles were lit against the long night, not because they chased the darkness away, but because they reminded people that they were not alone in the darkness. And we will be celebrating that very thing on Christmas Eve with our candles lit in the darkness. The Yule log was burned slowly, intentionally, meant to last through the darkest days. Its embers were saved to kindle the next fire. Nothing was wasted, and nothing was rushed. Everything was connected. And this was a holy time because it told the truth that life includes darkness, that rest is part of survival, that nothing grows forever without pause, and that stillness itself is sacred. And I want all you busy people out there to take that in. Stillness itself is sacred. And we so often forget that, especially at this time of year. And And this wisdom was not unique to one place or one people. Across cultures and continents, human beings marked this turning with astonishing care. Stone circles aligned with the sun, temples oriented to the horizon. Stories were told and retold about descent and return, death and rebirth. Not as fairy tales, but as maps for the human soul. And what I love about these ancient observances is how grounded they were. They didn't promise instant light. They didn't pretend that winter was over or that everything was going to be easy again. They simply marked the turning. And that is what the winter solstice is. Not the end of darkness, but a threshold. A hinge point between what has been and what is still becoming. And that, my friends, matters for us in these times, right? Because so often we want certainty. We want proof that things are going to be okay. We want guarantees that the light will come back quickly, dramatically, and without cost, right? But solstice offers us something quieter and perhaps more trustworthy. It doesn't come like a great flash in a pan. It offers rhythm. It offers pattern. It offers the assurance that change is woven into the fabric of existence itself. Now, the ancients didn't control the sun, but they chose to align themselves with it. And that is the invitation of this season for us as well. Reverend Barbara Wells Ten Hove names this beautifully when she writes of this moment where the earth seems suspended, when the tipping stops, when everything pauses, and then almost miraculously, the turning begins again. And that, my friends, is where we are today, this sacred moment. The solstice is not the end of the darkness. Winter still stretches before us, especially for those of you, I know there are people on the East Coast watching us right now, where the long winters, cold winters stretch before us, and the nights will remain long. The cold will linger, and yet from this moment forward, the light grows. Almost invisibly at first, a minute at a time, a soft insistence rather than a dramatic arrival. And this is the kind of hope that I trust deep within. It's not flashy. It's not naive. It's not pretending that the darkness that we're currently facing isn't real. But it's steady. It's faithful, it's persistent. And this year, the solstice feels especially meaningful to me. We live in a world that feels shaken, foundations crumbling, divisions fierce, and many of us are carrying grief, exhaustion, fear, or quiet despair. But Keelan Harkin writes that it is when the earth shakes that our light is called to rise up. Not because it's easy, but because it's necessary. And Shannon is a wonderful example of shining your light every week amidst this darkness. And as you know, this solstice also marks a threshold for me. In just a few days' time after Christmas Eve, I will step into sabbatical, a season of stepping back, of listening more deeply, of going within and letting myself be held by silence, by pilgrimage and rest. A season that begins now in the darkest time of the year and carries me through the slow returning of the light. I'm hoping I will heal from my cold during that time too. I'm hoping it will be a time for my light to gradually return after a season of darkness. And when I come back, we'll be closer to the summer solstice. And we will stand in a different relationship with the sun. The days will be longer, the light abundant, the world lush again. And I love that arc. I love that my leaving and returning are held within this ancient rhythm, that my absence is not an abandonment, but a turning, a necessary bend in the dance that we all do together. And this is where simplicity comes in. We sang earlier, "'Tis the gift to be simple, 'tis the gift to be free." Simplicity is not about doing less for the sake of it. It is about coming down where we ought to be, about remembering what actually sustains life. So I invite you, my friends, to do something very difficult for many of you, and that is to keep things simple while I'm away. You know who I'm speaking to. Don't start a lot of new programs and push to make a lot happen. Use this sabbatical as your own. I'm looking at you, Ani Barker. Use this sabbatical as your own opportunity to take things gently, simply, and nourish your light. Because that is how we make it through dark times. We have to get in tune with the natural rhythms of life. Newgrange teaches us that simplicity doesn't mean small effort. Heaven knows how they got those giant boulders there at that time. But simplicity means clarity of purpose. That means build what matters, align with what is true, trust the turning and rhythms of life. And during my time away, I will carry you with me in my heart into old cathedrals and quiet chapels, along ancient paths and unfamiliar roads. I promise no feet breaking, I hope, anyway. And you will carry on here, loving one another, tending this community, holding the flame with simplicity and ease. So, my friends, this is not a goodbye. It's just a pause. It's a breath. It's a turning. Like those ancient people at Newgrange, we do not wait passively for the light. We prepare for it. We make space for it within and among us, and we trust that it knows the way. And we keep tending it amidst the dark, trusting that it will return. So today, on this longest night, may we honor the darkness, the time of unknowing, without fear. And may we resist the urge to rush past it. And may we remember that even now, even here, the light has already begun its return. May it be so.